on the phone now, our friend attorney Michael Nichols with the Nichols Law Firm. Good evening, Michael. How are you?
Good evening, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. You were my first call yesterday when I saw the news break came out that Kelly Bernero had been picked up for impaired driving. And not to talk about the case specifically, nor to pick on her, but the case brings up some very interesting things that I am not aware of how they work. So I wanted to talk to someone who literally wrote the book, the Michigan DUI Handbook, which is you, about how this whole process works with impaired driving. Just off the top, Ms. Bernero did some things right, didn't she, when she didn't blow at the scene as the officers had talked with her about?
Well, from what I read and all I know, Cheryl, is my discussions with you and having read the excellent story by Kevin Gracia in the Lansing State Journal, which, you know, I mean, he got the story, and he gets credit for that.
Although absolutely.
Certainly much to the chagrin of the Bernero family, and we don't wish any ill will on anyone. But from what I understand, she declined the preliminary breath test, or PBT, they call it for short, which is kind of, it's been misnamed by everyone. It's really a portable breath test. But from my understanding, she declined to take that, which, you know, I never advise anyone to break the law, but I just don't know of any reason why you would take a PBT when the penalty is a $200 or so civil infraction. There's no criminal penalty and no impact on your driving privileges. And a lot of people, you know, just don't understand that. It's that evidential breath test or the data master test at the police station that if you refuse, your refusal will have a potential impact on your driving privileges in the state. So I would certainly think that if there's a question about the validity of the officer's arrest decision, the lack of a PBT may or may not have helped her, although if you believe the allegation that the breath estimate at the jail was really 0.06 grams of ethanol per 210 liters of her breath, then maybe the PBT would have been below 0.08 as well, and who knows if the officers would have arrested her. But I certainly believe that when it comes to being an accused citizen in our system, less is more, and the less evidence that the government has against you, the better.
And part of the story, again, Kevin Grasha's story, and I appreciate you bringing up his name because he is a great writer and he gets the stories. What I was confused about is being able to be pulled over, or charged with impaired driving, and then being visibly impaired. I'm confused as to how they even get to that point.
Sure, and I can tell you I don't know what the policy is now, and I know that this is a City of East Lansing case, not an Ingham County case, but mm-hmm. I know in 2004 when the legislature last made a substantive rewrite as opposed to an addition like what we did with the high BAC last year, but in 2004 Stuart Dunnings indicated that his policy was don't charge a case where the person's breath or blood estimate is under the statutory presumptive limit of 0.08. And here's why. Because when you're below 0.08, you can still be convicted of a crime, but it's the way it's typically handled is that it's a lesser included offense or a lesser conviction that the jury can impose upon you if the jury's not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that you were either A, 0.08 or higher, or B, under the influence. Visibly impaired requires that there is some bad driving. The person's ability to drive must be just that. It must be visibly impaired. And the jury instruction that the judge will read to the jury at the end of the case says, the person's driving must have, A, been affected by the alcohol. The alcohol must have made the person less careful than an ordinary driver. And, B, it would have been noticed by someone else, which means, you know, you've got to have some indicator that the person was weaving or stopping and starting, or accelerating erratically, because to say it would have been noticed by somebody else, frankly, means was visibly noticeable, right? And mm-hmm. and so that's the question to me is, you know, what did the officer observe? Did anybody else observe some evidence of impaired driving? And if not, then impaired driving maybe isn't going to be something that she's convicted of, and it's unfortunate that she was even charged and publicly, you know, dragged through the media like this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by the same token, you have to give credit to a watchful press.
Well, and again, as I said off the top, I am not trying to make this bigger than it needs to be, but the story, I think, there's some areas of this that a lot of us are not familiar with, impaired driving, and I just thought it was a touchstone for some learning that can go on. And I also wonder, Michael, about, is there a fine line between what can appear to be uncooperative with the police when you say, I'm not going to take a PBT and protecting your rights?
Absolutely, and I have on our website at NicholsLawyers.com a number of resource tools, including articles and tips. And one of the things that I caution people to say is, you know, don't give them evidence, and don't answer questions, and you don't have to do field sobriety tests. Mm-hmm. And there, it's one thing to say, hey, I'm not going to cooperate with you, I'm not going to take your tests. But another thing to be rude or obstructive, because, you know, many times the officer is just trying to do his job, and you're not making anybody's life any easier by being combative or disruptive. You know, you can tell the officer, I politely decline to take your test or answer your questions, unless you have some suspicion of something that I specifically did wrong. I'm not going to be answering your questions. No disrespect intended.
Mm-hmm. And it can be just as simple as that.
Yeah. And you know, the officer is supposed to instruct you under the law when it comes to the PBT. You know, Michigan law requires a person to submit to a PBT upon request of a police officer. Your failure to do that will result in a civil infraction with a fine of $200, and that's it. The officer is not supposed to and shouldn't be going off on some editorial about, you know, why don't you want to cooperate with me and your license could be impacted. Because if the officer does that, then the officer is misleading the person. And for that purpose, the PBT may then be disregarded if there's a challenge to the officer's arrest decision. The other point to make sure of is the PBT is not admissible in a court in trial unless either the prosecutor or the defense attorney opens up the door. The PBT is admissible at a hearing where the officer's arrest decision is challenged. But otherwise, it's not sufficiently reliable to be admitted as evidence in our courtrooms in Michigan.
Well, and I'm gathering also that it's not about it's about how to try to negotiate through this process if you get stopped like this, while protecting your rights at the same time and not have a worse
Sure.
outcome than it needs to be.
Sure, absolutely. And that observation is one of the reasons why I think this is more compelling radio, because you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's we have become such a society where once you're arrested, you're presumed to be guilty, especially when it comes to OWI. And you know, it's thanks to those public service announcements and the media coverage, over the limit, under arrest, you drink, you drive, you lose. Well, I mean, that's not quite true. You drink, you drive, you may or may not be over the legal limit. You drink, you drive, you may not be impaired or under the influence. The question is, were you, and secondarily, if you're arrested, can it be proved beyond a reasonable doubt that you were, and if not, you shouldn't give up your right to a trial. And further, there's, you know, always the question of whether or not the officer should have pulled you over and whether or not the officer should have arrested you. And I realize that our, you know, any lawyers listening out there are going to say, yeah, but the Supreme Court is eroding the Fourth Amendment and our civil liberties and our right to be free from unreasonable stops and seizures. But, you know, if you don't challenge the case, you're never going to protect the citizens' rights. And there are even though many people say there is a DUI exception to the Fourth Amendment, there still is a constitution in this country. And it's important to remind those with the very, very often unchecked authority that law enforcement officers have, it's important to remind them that, hey, we're there and we're watching and we're making sure that this isn't becoming a runaway society where, and I'm not saying that's what's happening, but, you know, we're making sure that you know we're watching you so that you don't abuse the power that you've been given.
Well, as always, Michael, I love having you on the show. Your perspective and your expertise are extraordinary, and I love to hear it. And folks who listen to you get some great legal advice at the same time and points to ponder.
Thank you both for mentioning the book and reminding me that this weekend I have to get my updates to the book done. For the 2011-2012 edition, which is almost like a brand new book because I think I've got about 9 different sections when you factor in both the OWI changes and the medical marijuana changes.
Well, and that's going to have to be another phone call because you and I never have enough time. So I'll be calling you on that. You ever heard of that book with your young children called If You Give a Mouse a Cookie?
Right.
There you go. That's kind of like your handbook. Once you put that handbook out there, it needs constant updating. You have to keep feeding it. So
take it, give an inch, take a foot.
There you go. The Michigan DUI Handbook.